Well, they did get one goal. There it is. How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to the show. 8:19 here on this Thursday morning. J.R. Simmer and Hammer with you. Sens fall 3-1 of the Rangers. Highlights in the other three games around the league. And we were talking earlier this morning about, you know, the Leafs have been around for 100 years. And it's just, this is not a Leaf bashing thing. But the fact that they've had, what is it, four 50-goal scores in their history?
Simmer? Yeah. Marner yeah. Along with Vibe, no, Anderchuk, and Lehman. No?
Not Marner.
No. Oh, Matthews.
Matthews,
hello.
Yes. You know, as I heard Joe Bowen go rather loudly and vociferously, as he does, about that tying the record of 18 straight, I sort of think to myself, like, don't get me wrong. Like, scoring a point in 18 straight games is a real, really good accomplishment.
Yeah.
Does that not seem like, again, for a franchise that's been around for 100 years, like, it just should be longer?
Yeah.
Like,
somebody should have
a record into the 20s?
Where's a Doug Gilmore? Now, I know
I know
playing in the OHL in the mid-80s, a lot of guys got points not being on the ice. And at times, if you played for Bill LaForge, not even being in the building. But, hey, that's the story.
I saw Wayne Gretzky play in junior the one year he played for the Sioux, and this was without a word of a lie. He got an assist on a goal, and he was sitting on the bench. He assisted on all four goals in a 5-4 loss to the London Knights back in the day.
And anyway. I think our next guest is old enough to remember back in the day of quite a bit of bickering after games about who should have a second assist?
Like minor hockey. Who wants an assist? All right, here's Mike Johnson, our TSN Hockey Insider, presented as always by the Myers Automotive Group. Any memories of that, MJ?
There was the odd politicking for an assist or a goal. I got a piece of that one because it's not like it is now where they get it right. Like if you deserve it, you basically, you know, like if you deserve it over someone else, if you touched it, then you get it. Back then, when I first started, if you got your name on the score sheet, if they said, you know, Johnson picked up the assist, like you'd have to kind of, obviously something would have to happen for them to take it away. So, yeah, there was some, you know, the notion of guys kind of like looking at the ref, pointing to their chest, like I got that one or I touched that one or whatever it might be. That did occur on occasion back in the day for sure.
Yeah, I was going to say, MJ, it's an important thing. I can remember the video coach was the guy where the kind of players went to it. And I guess it's almost a relief for the players now, right? Because, hey, it did mean a lot, especially I think it was more on second assists of, hey, you know, the people start to around, oh, you're only worried about your points. I guess this is a lot better place for players to be in, eh?
It is. You know what? It's healthier, right? Like, yeah. You don't have to, like, if you deserve them, you get them. If you don't, you don't. If you tip it, they find out. They give you the goal. If you didn't, they don't, then you don't get the goal. But it does matter. Like, back in the day, right, like, we used to get, there's no individual bonuses on contracts anymore except for rookies and people over 35 or guys who've been injured a whole bunch. So like getting that second assist to get to 50 points or 40 points or whatever, like you can have bonuses for 10 assists. Like it didn't have to be a big number. So like getting a piece of that point total was, it mattered financially. Like it was very tangible. Like every five assists, you might've got another $25,000 bonus. So yeah, like guys would really care about it, and then understandably. So it's better this way. You get what you deserve, and if you don't deserve it, you generally don't get it anymore.
As Marner has been closing in, and we've heard lots about it consecutive point game streak that he's on, that he's now equaled. And listen, getting a point and scoring a goal in today's NHL, it's hard to do. There was a time in which scoring in the NHL was a lot easier to do. To my point of, I would have thought, you know, a franchise been around as long as the Leafs, the record would be longer than 18. Am I totally off on that, or do you kind of go, yeah, it does seem like it should be longer?
You know what? I don't even know, because I'd have to see like what the franchise record in Montreal and what the franchise record in Boston and Chicago. And I think Patrick Kane just set Chicago's at like 22 or 24
right,
a few years ago to start the season. So, and maybe part of it is because the Leafs were so terrible in the 80s when it was easiest to score. Like, think of, like, they were not good that decade,
right,
and they didn't have star players. So maybe the time when most franchises' streaks would have been recorded, they were garbage. So that probably has something to do with it as well. So I don't want to diminish for a second what Mitch Marner is accomplishing. Nope. You own a record for any franchise, let alone an original 6-1, for an all-time thing. That's very impressive, and deserves full credit.
How impressive have you been with Johnny Tavares? Because I think we talk about Nylander a lot, Matthews, Marner, and quietly, under a lot of pressure at the end of last year, he's come back and right after a point of game.
But that's what he does. Like, even last year when he, you know, struggled, apparently, like he was basically a point of game player still. Like, you know, that's just kind of what he does. He's been good. He's been consistent. He's produced points. He scored lots of goals. Generally speaking, early on, it was driven by the power play, which is okay. Power play production is part of what he is supposed to do. But he has settled in nicely as the number two center in Toronto. I think for a little while, he wasn't jockeying with Austin Matthews, but he was like a 1B. He's not really a number one center to the same degree anymore. He's the second center, and he's a really good one. Quietly goes about his business, plays well with different players. So, the first 10 games were with Nylander. The next 10 have been with Marner. He's equally productive with both. His 5-on-5 game has actually gotten a little bit better. And I wonder if a summer of relative good health after a couple of tough summers and good training, he worked on his foot speed and his fitness and trying to get a little bit quicker at his age and a half second quicker has been an improvement for him. But I'm not surprised. Like, I think I was asked before the season started, what would Tavares do? I'm like, he'll get you 34 goals and 81 points. Like, he does it all the time, and he's going to do it again this year.
All right, Sens. we're just trying to come up with through the morning. It was just kind of a game last night versus New York. Let's start with, I want to get your, because I don't think we've asked you this before, this whole coming back from a long road trip out west, first game back home. Statistically, I didn't know the stats. The guy that lead that hosts the afternoon show, good sample size, 10-year window from 2008 to 2018. Team that's been on a 3-game road trip or longer only wins 37% of the first games back home. You lived it. You lived playing in the NHL for a dozen years. Is there something to it, as the statistics would seem to tell you?
Clearly, I guess the numbers don't lie, and there is. So, like, there's a few different reasons why this might happen. When you leave a West Coast road trip, you have two options. You either take a red-eye home after the game, which does, like, as comfortable as the planes are, no one's feeling sorry for anyone. It's a red-eye. It still messes up your day, and you don't sleep normal, and it kind of sets you back for some fatigue. Then you usually have a day off, and then you get back to work and practice and then go to play. So, like, that red-eye is not good for your energy levels and your sleep patterns, which are important. If you don't fly home, stay overnight in Vancouver, LA, Anaheim, Phoenix. That's also not good for your sleep patterns and doesn't help your energy levels. And, guys will go out and have a beer and, hang out and visit. And then it's, 2 in the morning, West Coast time, which is 5 in the morning, our time. And your sleep patterns are all messed up and you're fatigued. So no matter what, when you come home, you're probably going to be tired, even if you did everything right. And then you get home, and whether you're young guys, you don't have a family around, that's one thing. If you have a family around, like, plugging back in if you've been gone for a week and you're, taking the kids to school or cleaning up the house or doing your chores or going, you're kind of just integrating back into your day-to-day routine, which is, again, taking a slight bit of focus away from playing the game because you're not worried about it. And the last bit is, I wonder, flying home, not practicing generally because they don't practice the first day after they get back just so everyone can rest and do whatever. And then jumping either into a game or maybe one more practice in a game, if that is the best prep for it, and you bundle all that up together, and it's a real thing. Like, you can talk to yourself, and teams have tried different things, staying over, flying home, you name it. And, I don't think anyone's really found a solution to that issue, which is why, teams that are in the East that don't usually deal with tough travel, I think probably struggle even more because you're not used to in Ottawa. What's great is, like, no matter where they play, just about, they're in their bed by 1 a.m. if they go back to Ottawa from wherever they played. And that's not the case when you go out west. So,
right.
There's something to it. We know about it. We hear about it. And there's something to it.
Hmm. Now, you lived it both ways because you played, the majority of your career in East Coast-based teams, including the Leafs. But you also played in Phoenix, so you played in the West. Mm-hmm. Did you find, when you went on a long Eastern trip, when you played for Phoenix, same deal, or was it different because you're gaining 3 hours on your way back?
It was different. So when you play in Tampa and you fly home and you leave right after the game, you take off at 11 and you land at 12. And, like, your body is predisposed, even if you've been on the road for a week, like, your body naturally is on the time clock of wherever you're living in Phoenix. So, it's different on those trips from the East. But let's not make any mistake. Travel is so much harder, for West Coast teams, Western Conference teams.
Right.
Like, it's not even close. Like, playing for Toronto and Montreal, it was a walk in the park in your own bed by 12:30 at night. Whereas, in Phoenix, the closest team we went to was L.A., which took, like, you know, an hour and a half to get to, and then an hour to drive to wherever airport you're going in LA. So, the teams in the Western Conference do not want to hear any complaints from Eastern teams about anything about with regards to travel.
And the only other part when you landed in Phoenix in December is realizing you live there, and the next stop is the golf course. That fires up the engine. MJ, you look at last night, kind of magnified, and I guess where the energy's a bit down, you look at a game like last night, and when the margins are so close, the simple D-zone coverage that comes back to bite you is a reason why. I understand all the things that come into this, but it's hard to kind of look at the program and feel bad in that they're still making the same mistakes.
Yeah, I mean, it was a decent start last night for Ottawa, all things considered, the first period, and then the game kind of got progressively worse for Ottawa and better for the Rangers. You know, some broken plays, but tip drills, and I think you mentioned it, Simmer, it's tight margins, right? So everyone makes mistakes all the time. But when you score a few more, or you're getting a few more saves, or whatever, you know, things are going well, they don't tend to end up in the back of the net, or if they do, they don't cost you points and feel as heavy and as important and as numerous, as many mistakes as when they do. And so I think, I think it's all part of that. They're not a perfect defensive team. They don't have perfect defensive players. I think generally speaking, you know, their system play has been not bad this year. Like, I don't think they've been completely porous in their own end, completely porous without the puck. There were some mistakes made. Some sticks weren't tied up. And Ryan Lindgren all of a sudden turned, you know, was getting all points left and right with his point shots. But it's just the margins. Right now, the way Ottawa's going in the standing, game to game, with their goaltending, there's no room to make mistakes, and that's a tough way to play hockey.
I didn't like the body language of Stützle, of course, doing that. I mean, I know players hate when goalies do it. Just thoughts on that and how you might handle that as a leadership group?
Yeah, like, I mean, being demonstrative, being emotional is everyone operates differently. I get what you're saying, like showing your frustration or your exasperation with what's going on is not healthy. And I imagine the leadership group, now it's always tricky because, you know, Brady's the leader and he is the leader and he's mature enough and has the respect to say whatever to anybody. But, you know, when he's basically the same age, a kid as well, sometimes like, hey, don't behave that way. Take it from me. I know. Like, what do you know? You're like 6 months older than me. You've been around for six more. But I think maybe pulling him aside saying, listen, not going to come down on you for the one time event, but everyone knows when bad things happen. Everyone gets frustrated. When you react strongly, it draws attention to the mistake, yours or somebody else's, and we're trying to be positive and work through that. And so that's maybe not the most helpful way to go about doing it. So next time, maybe just try to corral the emotion in that moment and don't make, you know, an irritated, exasperated situation worse. And I bet he would learn a little bit as he gets older and he hears that message that, you know, maybe it's not the same. Maybe it's more muted reaction next time.
Is that something where it might also be easier if Giroux delivers that as opposed to Kachuk, who's more of a... I mean, they're both peers, but you know what I mean? There's a huge difference.
100%. That's exactly what I'm thinking. Chabot, Giroux for sure, because Giroux, I think, would have walked in that room and by the force of his personality and the strength of his career would have the instant respect of everyone. And, you know, Tim Stützle... Like, and he's also been a star. Like, there's some element to that. Like, don't just, like, you know, Holden could say it. He's been around a long time, but there's something different when a star that you kind of are aspiring to be like, have a career like, were to say it. I think it would land truer. And that's one of the advantages of having Claude Giroux around, is that he can do that kind of stuff to help Brady and the rest of the leadership group.
We spent a bunch of time yesterday in the lead up to the game, because anytime the Sens will play the Rangers, a lot of focus on the 2020 draft and Stützle and Lafreniere. What are your thoughts just overall? I mean, you do some Ranger games and you're in New York quite a bit, NHL Network and stuff. What are your thoughts just on the development curve of Alexis Lafreniere?
It's been slow. I mean, it's like, you know, it's slow and steady, I guess, like not nearly as impactful as the Rangers would have hoped so far. My concern with him would be, like, he was so good in junior, but, you know, I think he's a late birthday. So he was, you know, drafted a year later. And you wonder if at his draft year level, he was just bigger and stronger and more mature than the guys he was playing against. And that made him better, but, like, not by the degree that the stats made him look. And he had a great World Junior, of course, as well. And when you get to the NHL, like if you're just stronger than everyone in college or junior or Europe, you're not going to be stronger than everyone by a lot in the NHL because nobody is. And, you know, if you're an okay skater at junior, you're going to be a slow skater in the NHL because everyone is faster. And I think that's what's happened to him. Like the things he was better at physically, like I still think he sees the game and I still think he has good, great hands. But I think the physical tools that he was better at in junior, he's not better at. He's not stronger. He's not faster than people here. And so he's having a hard time finding open ice. And that's been his challenge. You know, I've seen lots of redrafts and not to suggest anything Lafreniere is not a bust or anything like that, but Tim Stützle would be the first pick in that draft if they were to redo it. Because he's got the dynamic skating. And I think that's Lafreniere's bigger issue. And you can dump Lafreniere and Kako with second overall and Philip Hedl. Like all three of those guys are lumped together with the Rangers as guys who they need to take a step forward and haven't done it.
Do you see them taking a step forward? I'd say even more on Kako, where when you start to look at those stats and the lack of progression, yeah. MJ, you kind of are what you are.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how long you get Simmer. 3 years, 4 years, it's a young man's game. Like, most players that are going to be really good players, by their fourth year, by the time they're 22, like, they're well on their way to becoming a player who's that good. So, you know, Kako, he's got 8 points this year. He's and for his career, he's averaging a point every three games, a goal every six games. Like, it's just, you know, he's an NHL player, but I don't know if you're anticipating a bump to even top six production. I mean, at this point, I just don't know. I would have thought, like, I think Lafreniere will probably settle into a 20-goal, 55-point guy. I don't know if Kako even gets to that. He might just be, like, a third, fourth liner who, you know, could play in the NHL but never really produce a ton because, you know, 4 years. Even his fourth full season with the Rangers, albeit, you know, disjointed years sometimes with COVID, but he's past the point of saying, well, he's young. He probably should be figuring out to a greater degree than he has.
Just a final one on the Sens. They're pacing right now at their current pace. We're at the quarter pole, mm-hmm. so, you know, you kind of are what you are. They're pacing for 63 points this year, mm-hmm. which last year was 73, and everybody was going, well, they should get into the 80s. Right now they're pacing at 63. So our question this morning to everybody on our web poll is, are they even going to get to 73? What do you think?
Yes, I think they will. I think they will. I still believe that they are playing better than their results, which rings hollow because you are what your record says you are, and that's all that matters. But I think that they've played better than their results, and so they'll climb closer to 500.
All right.
Which means 73 points. I think they probably get over that. As long as their goaltending, you know, holds up and is decent, they'll get there. They're not going to get to the playoffs, but they're going to get back to that no man's land where you're not getting the first pick, but you're going to be well out of the playoffs, which might be worse. It might be better, really, to get 63 points
yeah.
than it would be to get 75 at this point.
Especially in this draft.
In this draft, especially. If you get Fantilli or you get, I mean, Bedard, obviously,
yep.
that would be something special if you could.
Have you guys been looking at the 2025 draft, though? I'll tell you what.
We'll leave Stop that it. One alone. All right, you got the Sens and Rangers game tomorrow night on TSN, so you'll see firsthand down at MSG, so safe travels. Really appreciate the time and the insight, as always, and look forward to chatting with you again next week.
All right, guys, have a great weekend.
49 on this Canada game day as they're taking on Morocco in their final game of the World Cup. We've got a pregame show coming up at 9:30, and the kickoff will be right at 10 o'clock. They've just listed the starting 11 for Canada. Includes a number of changes. The one maybe raising the most eyebrows, or maybe it shouldn't. Jonathan David starts on the bench for Canada, at least to begin the game through two games. And he got subbed off in the last game. He has been, you know, largely, for the most part, hasn't really stood out at all, has not created a lot of chances. Now, some would say the service hasn't been there to get him. I always love that, the service.
Oh, they have the best terms, though. Yeah, we got to bring them all over.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's pretty accurate, though, is it not, Jair? Like, as a goal scorer, and that's where I like to talk to the soccer experts, hey, you've got to get me the balls, right?
And some would say that you got to get in the spot so I can get you the ball, right? Okay, this is right, the yin and the yang of all these conversations of it's the chicken or egg thing. Like, what is the issue? Why isn't Jonathan David scored a goal or created more offensive chances. Is it what he's not doing or what his teammates are not doing for him, right? That's the part, the debatable part. But what we do know is to at least start, he'll be on the bench, as will Atiba Hutchinson to begin in, 39 years old, what we can all agree will be his last World Cup. And there was some criticism of his play and his pace in the last game against Croatia in the midfield. And the tough one for me is that, John Herdman acknowledged that he was going to take Hutchinson out at halftime, and that Hutchinson, said, I'd like to stay on for longer. And so he started the second half. And I'll be honest with you, I don't remember if he was still on for the third goal was the one that went between his legs, right?
Yeah,
that's true.
He was seasoned up like
he
an
was.
Old engine.
We talked to Drew Becky yesterday, and it's kind of like that's the eternal dilemma of you have your most respected player, your most capped player, the player that's been there the longest. Yeah. And he's not doing it. I don't think he's doing it for selfish reasons. He still believes that he can help the team. But as the coach, ultimately, should not the coach make that decision and decide that, I love the fact that you want to get out there and you want to give it a go in the second half, but it's just not working. And your level, just your pace isn't high enough. We need to move faster players into your spot to have a chance in this game.
Yeah, absolutely, Jared. Now, I'd assume he'll come on late in today's game. It's kind of the last thing, or I guess a lot of guys come out, to get the ovation. I look at it this way, and I know it is very difficult, and I really respect it. At that halftime, you're in a position where you can still get a result. You owe it to everybody else, including your country, to take that fella out. I mean, it is simple as that. There is nothing emotional about, hey, if it's today's game, which means really nothing, okay, I understand it. But yeah, am I accurate? Like someone told me the story, and it's not even a soccer person. Did Alphonso Davies take the ball and say he was going to take the penalty kick?
Yes.
There's another situation there, which
but
again.
So go ahead.
No, I was going to say that to me, Jonathan David, based on this, the way he plays and his experience with it, versus a guy that plays left center back, and I'm assuming for Bayern Munich, never takes penalty kicks, or maybe he does. I just thought that's another situation where
that was well debated.
What was your thought on it, Jer?
Well, there's two schools of thought, right? First of all, it's should the coach make the decision ahead of time as to who takes penalties, or as we see a lot, be it at the club level or country level, where the players decide amongst themselves. And there certainly is a hierarchy within the team, right? And there's no doubt that on Team Canada that Alphonso Davies is the best player,
for sure.
But he does not have a history. In fact, has zero history of taking penalties at the club level at all. Whereas Jonathan David takes penalties for his club teams, has taken 12 in his career and scored on 9 of them, 75%, which is actually a little below average. But still, he's done it. And was that the right decision to make? That was fiercely debated.
Okay, and this is also no excuses for Jonathan David. But it's a little bit what I touched on with DeBrincat to start the year, Jer, and the reason why I would have had him on a first power play. When I'm goal scorers, and part of it in hockey is playing a power play to get my touches, I would even wonder how he's feeling inside if you're Jonathan David. And I love Alphonso Davies, and I love he's a leader. He sucks up a ton of the oxygen. He's always interested behind the scenes, and I think historically, and I don't know how you'd relate it Dutch-wise, but I know for Portugal, when Ronaldo shows up for a coach that's coaching the national team, it's not easy to handle Ronaldo. I think back to David Beckham and his personality. It must be really interesting, JR, for these teams when the superstar player comes in, and for Alphonso Davies, who chose to come and play for you, is so passionate, is on there cheering even when he's not playing. Yeah, it's a really interesting dynamic for a young coach, right, on how you handle all this stuff, and then how does it filter through the rest of the group?
Absolutely. All right, so Jonathan David on the bench, Atiba Hutchinson on the bench, Richie Larea is on the bench. New to the starting 11, and I just jotted down really quickly. Yeah. Jonathan Osorio is starting, I'll assume in the midfield. Marc-Anthony Kay is in, Sam Adekubi, and Junior Hoilett.
Yeah.
Those appear to be players that are starting in the starting 11 for Canada.
In the case of Jonathan David, a few things, Jared. Like, do you think, first of all, is this a punishment? Second, is it letting him watch for a bit and then come in? And then also, is he close to being transferred? And I kind of touched on this with Alphonso Davies. Like, does he not have a big transfer coming up? I don't think they'd be looking at it that way, right? This is either, hey, we don't think you're playing well, or sit for a while and we're going to put you in?
No, I think you see a lot of, especially among strikers, because they do a lot of running, right?
Okay,
and you often, And this is one, again, if you're, you know, and I listen, I think I'm a little more than a casual fan, but I'm not presenting myself as a soccer expert. But you see sometimes where you go, well, why isn't, you know, the star striker, why doesn't he start the game? Well, often they'll come in at like the 60-minute mark, and it's like they got 30 good minutes, and you're playing against players that have played the entire game,
right?
Yeah. Exactly. So there is some theory of, hey, I got a fresher player coming off the bench for the most crucial last half hour of the match when there's a better chance he may be able to score a goal. So there's that theory as well. So I don't look upon it at all.
Okay.
And maybe this is a discussion on the TV side as a punishment for poor play or that he's off form.
Yeah.
I think it's just, hey, they're mixing and matching and trying some new things. And I don't think there's any doubt we're going to see Jonathan David at some point in this match.
And I would think at the international level, JR, even more is that, and again, any of these matches you go into, it's like boxers that have never met, right? There's a feeling out process of your athleticism. And certainly it took Croatia a little while to figure that out, right? They had, Canada had them on their heels. And I would think for an opposition defender, when you have a striker like David, who's a good athlete, that's real interesting when you haven't felt him at all on the field, right? You haven't felt his athleticism. All of a sudden, you're a little bit fatigued, and he steps onto the pitch. That would make a lot of sense. That's why Peter Kleiman never played all of that overtime back in the day.
He just
Glenn Sather
just at the right moment.
Went into the soccer manual. Yeah, yeah. Get him out there.
I want to ask Gary Galley about that. He was on the ice for the Bruins.
Okay.
Will King JR give us Friday off if Canada wins for the first time at the World Cup? Excellent. Yes. Yes. I do decree that all Canadians will have tomorrow off if Canada wins this match today. So take that to all the bosses out there.
Yeah. He's also
we'll be working.
Yeah, what? And Myers will be giving free cars to the players as well.
What kind of cars?
I don't know. Something
will we
good.
Get the Rolls Royces? Will they get that?
Is that what they got, or do they get high end Mercedes?
I thought they got Rolls Royces. I thought.
Oh, wow, nice. That's pretty solid.
Is it? is it possible? Writes unsigned texter. Is it possible the guys coming in will get more money if they start a World Cup game versus being subbed in? I don't know. I could be speaking totally out of my backside on this.
Okay.
That the distribution of, and this is still to be determined, right? How much the Canadian, both on the men and women's side, how much of the pot the players are going to get. This is still a contract that isn't done.
Yeah.
I don't know that. I could be totally wrong, and somebody set me straight if I am. I don't think there's a sliding scale of who gets paid what.
Yeah.
I think if you're on the team, you're getting X.
Yeah, I would think so too, but it takes me back to my American Hockey League days, JR, and you didn't get paid in the playoffs. What there was a pool, and it was interesting because I was the third tender. Now, I was an excellent radio commentator as well, but the amount, and the players had to decide, does everybody on the roster want to get a piece of the pie, or do the starters, basically the 20 guys that are playing all the games, get X amount, and then the other guys get half shares? Yeah, it's always kind of all these things as we navigate our way along in soccer. Not to mention, again, I don't care if it's hockey, soccer, these federations and how they dole out compensation JR. there's no magic formula for one. Saudi Arabia is handing out Rolls Royces. The Canadian players are kind of like, hey man, I wouldn't make, you sure gonna get a Uber to the airport here?
Right.
You just, as I say, it's really interesting and very different from each federation.
All right, 8:59. I want to quickly touch on, because a bunch of feedback. You asked MJ about Tim Stützle's demonstrative, we'll put it that, his hands out to his side after the third New York goal that Kreider tipped in.
And I don't care about that, Jared. That's not. And I don't know if MJ kind of got my point or if his point.
Well, I'm not sure if he. Yeah, you didn't. Well, I don't criticize your question, but you kind of threw it like he'd for sure know what it was, and I'm not sure that he did. Maybe he did. Maybe he didn't. But. Just to set it up, on Kreider's third goal for New York, he tips it in. He's kind of standing by himself, and Stützle kind of whips around and puts his arms out to his side and appears to be looking at Zub.
Exactly.
And it's kind of like that's your guy, what's going on here? And, within the hockey hierarchy or code, you don't show up your teammates. I put out the screen grab and I threw it out on my social media. And, I won't say a lot, but some people are weighing in on, well, what's wrong with showing emotion? Like, what's wrong with Tim Stützle kind of, in a way, kind of showing a little bit of frustration?
Hey, man, I'm telling you, and there's some of his behavior that I look the other way because I know he's a young player and I know he's a young star. I said this a number of years ago to Ian when Shane Prince was doing the beaver tail on the ice to Chris Neal and completely showing him up. I said, listen, man, that ain't going to go over well. He's like, are you sure? I'm like, listen, last night with Tim Stützle, and especially as a younger player, and you have a guy like Zub who's pretty anonymous, you are showing up the other player. That right there, emotion's great, but you have not. If you think that that's not that that's going to go over well in the room, and that guys won't be mad about that, you've never played hockey at any level. You don't do that. Like, guys hate that when a goaltender does it once in a while, right? Mm-hmm. You doing this of looking at Zub like, hey, man, that's supposed to be your guy. No, that's a terrible look right there. And if you think or you try to make an excuse for it, as I said, emotion is busting your stick over the post chair. That's emotion. I don't care about that. Or getting real mad once in a while. When you turn around and do a shrug like that, and I say this also because I look on top of with Stützle at times, some of the other body language and things, and I don't have a problem. He's a young player. But you don't do that to anybody, and I'll consider Zub to be a veteran player right now. It's a bad look.
Yeah, yeah, and I tend to agree with you. But it was interesting to me that that there is a certain percentage of people that are kind of going, you know, I don't mind my players being showing emotion on the ice and being frustrated at the circumstance. But
well, like I
there's
say,
one thing about being frustrated and showing emotion, but you don't show it to your teammate.
No, and even you know, you get on the bench. I mean, we had what last month when Brady Tkachuk was talking to Stützle on the bench. I love that stuff, JR. I don't mind it going back and forth, but this particular case, like, you are really showing somebody up. Like, imagine even you kind of turn around, or if you're looking at a goaltender and you do that, right? It just, again, I know people love Stützle and he's a real good young player, but as I said, if you have any comprehension of behind the scenes, that's not what you want. Nobody wants that in a team sport. On TV.
Here's a couple of tweets that did come in response to the screen grab. Why is this a problem? He plays with emotion and is a competitor. If you want a player to play with emotion, then you will have to accept that they show frustration. The counter to that from Robert, the boy, has a lot of maturing to do on the ice mainly. So
exactly he does. And like I said, if you don't get it, you don't get it. Like, if honestly, JR, like what you clipped right there, if you're trying to, and again, I know people sometimes are such a big fan, but if you can't comprehend of that look, that's not emotion right there. That's quite simply looking at another guy and basically saying, well, I thought you were supposed to have the guy, not me. That's what that look shows you.
Right. Yeah. And interesting that MJ, you know, and when he first started saying, yeah, that's something when they get back to the dressing room that Tkachuk maybe, you know, maybe will say something. This is where when you have a young captain like Brady Tkachuk, and not to say that he's not a really good leader, I absolutely and would have perhaps an issue with it, but I wonder if just easier if Claude Giroux does something like that.
It could be, but I also say this. Would you not agree that Timmy Stützle follows Brady Tkachuk along like a little brother?
Yep.
Like,
yep.
I don't think, and for the way Brady Tkachuk carries himself, I think that's the beautiful part. I don't think he would have a problem stepping in, and I'll also say this, coming from a hockey family, and I would even be curious as to what his brother and his dad, you know, as I'm sure they're communicating all the time. Those are all the little things. Like, I made the note a couple of years ago when the Tkachuks are at center ice talking and Stützle tries to slide in there and start having a conversation. I never forget the look on Matthew Tkachuk's face. It's like somebody broke into your room. Like, hey, what in God's name are you doing here? Yeah, or even when he went by, somebody had gotten in a fight. And he's going by and laughing in the Pelly box. And it's nothing wrong, JR. They're all little things. And, you know, but that one last night, you just understand. You don't, in a team, when a team is struggling. And then the other thing, I'll kind of circle back to your whole points and expectations, JR. What's different about this year is that when you talk about where the Sens are going to go in point totals, and I do agree with MJ, they're a better team. What's so different about this year, as you roll into the world of negativity, if this continues to slide, that's a different dynamic. Because of the other couple of years, we've always said, season's over. You're not going to make the playoffs. Just play the kids. Well, I think that ship has sailed, and how this will be handled by everybody involved is going to be completely different.
Josh tweets and says he's a sauerkraut. Huh? That's a pretty good play on words right there.
Are we allowed to say that?
Get it.
They actually, back in the day, were the Kitchener Bauerkraut. So I guess.
Yeah. Why? Is that is kraut considered to be, if it is, I apologize, derogatory term about German people? I don't think so. Is it?
I think so.
Oh, I'm going to have to look it up.
That was a term because I know the term in the Pacific Pacific Theater that was used. But I kind of always, I don't mean super derogatory, but I don't assume maybe you call up any of your the German friends and say, hey.
True. Good point.
And where does that even come from? Is it just, and sauerkraut? It's actually awesome on a hot dog.
All right, just past 9 o'clock. We'll get a top of the hour news and sports update. Come back with a final segment leading you up to the Canada-Morocco pregame show at 9:30, and they'll kick it off at 10 o'clock, Canada's final game at the World Cup. That's when we return right here on Sports Radio TSN 1200.
This is TSN 1200.
Welcome back, 9:19 here on this Thursday morning, taking you up to the Canada pregame show coming up in just a couple of minutes. Let's wrap up yesterday's Tool and Equipment Store web poll question of the day and set you up for today's. Yesterday we asked you, and this all in the context of Alexi Lafreniere, first pick in the 2020 draft, being here, and of course, Sens had two of the top five, Stutzel and Sanderson. And we said, hey, listen, for you-know-what and giggles, what if the Sens could only have one? Which one would you take, Stutzel or Sanderson? And when it was all said and done, 3,000 votes, pretty good cross-section of the fan base. Stutzel won the day, 57%, 57-43. So that's the wrap on yesterday's Tool and Equipment Store web poll question. Today's question is, in the wake of the Sens' latest loss, which was 3-1 to the Rangers last night, they're now sitting at 17 points in 22 games. So on pace for 63 points this year, which is actually 10 fewer than they had last year. Last year they had 73. Most people, I think almost everybody, thought, well, the Sens will be well into the 80s, and some people said maybe they'll even make the playoffs into the 90s. But again, they're on pace for 63. Our question today is this: will they beat last year's 73 points? Yes or no? So Simmer, I asked MJ. He said, yeah, they'll get past 73. They'll pick it up here a little bit.
Yeah.
Yes or no, will the Sens beat last year's 73-point total?
Well, I'm going to go with the numbers, JR, and I'll say yes, they're actually trending and should be. And there was just another stat package put out of underlying numbers where they rank, which I think was 13th. And it's funny because the worst teams in the NHL, as far as the underlying numbers by this group, has the four that we talked about, the Columbuses, the Arizonas, the Chicagos, the Anaheims. So I'll say yes, but what I said also said, JR, it's a different dynamic, and as this swirls into some negativity, how will they handle it? But I think at some point here, the pressure's going to be off. Well, maybe it are. Well, it isn't off because, again, expectations, but I'll say, yeah, they'll get north of that.
Okay. Yeah. Hammer.
I think at this point, through these many games, you are what your record says you are, unless there's change, unless something happens where there's improvement. But just going by this team as a whole, I don't think they're going to make it. I think they're going to fall below it. You just can't see. They've been inconsistent the entire year. What would change that?
Well, the argument would be, to Simmer's point, of underlying numbers would tell you that they, you know, that usually things will, and not in this case regress, but will improve to the point where what actually is happening matches what the numbers say that you will, right?
The only thing I could see helping the team is, again, garbage games in March and April.
Right.
Trying to
which is the exact wrong, you know, if you're just making up 10 points in the standings at that time of year.
Then you're kidding yourself.
Well, and it's also, if it does affect, and what everybody is saying is a really, really, the top end of the draft is supposed to be really good.
What's also different for this year, guys, and not that the players won't try, but you also have entered the next phase of everybody's been paid. You know, I mean, other years, and again,
well,
you
the Brinkat. Brinkat's TBD, and, you know, Jake Sanderson, actually, believe it or not, is eligible for his extension as soon as next summer as well.
Yeah. But the majority of the big boys,
yes,
like I said, you've entered through the phase of continuing hard, and sure, you're looking or saying all the team stuff, but everybody in the past has recognized that for the stats of Norris to Tkachuk, to some extent Batherson, to Stutzel, to everybody else, including Chabot, have all been paid.
I will say yes, I believe they still will get to 73. And again, just based on that, you know, part of it will improve to what the underlying numbers say. So that's, if I am being optimistic, really the benchmark for me, and again, being totally transparent here, I predicted the Sens would get 88 points in our preseason prognostication, a 15-point improvement from last year. They're not going to get to 88 points. Now the benchmark for me becomes 82 points. Can the Sens become a point-a-game team and 82? To do that, they would have to get 65 points in the remaining 60 games. There are 60 games left. They need to get 65 points. You think they could do that, Simmer?
Well, as it sits today, I don't have the best feeling, but I think we'd also, let's not kid ourselves, I do think at some point, and dynamic is different because of this darn ownership thing, JR, but either the coaching as far as starts bringing some wins or a change going to happen. I mean, you're not going to also, I'll say this, it's not going to slide so far the other way. And if you do that, history tells us for the majority of time that there is certainly a turnaround. I mean, that has to give at some point. Anybody be naive not to think, even under these circumstances, at some point you just don't say, hey, we got to do something here. And if it's not a big trade, then you got to make a change.
Right. Yeah, yeah, that's inevitable. Yeah. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But we'll see. Yeah. I mean, they face the Rangers again tomorrow. I think people are, just because last night's game was just kind of, it's just sort of ho-hum, right? It was just kind of a ho-hum game that I think as, and a lot of people I don't think stayed up super late to watch that LA game, which was a good game. I mean, they played well in that game. There's no taking it away from there.
Yeah.
They played well in that game, but just couldn't bring it home last night and play at that same level. And that's the inconsistency that drives people crazy.
Yeah, and the other part you really, and again, this is really if you want to, you know, look at underlying numbers, that's fine, JR. You have to also place your opponent. Okay, this is an LA team that then lost 9-8 to Seattle. Okay, we're just in a simple night, like some nights, 82 games, you have a night off. Were you that good in L.A., or was L.A. not very good? And I'm not saying I have an answer. I didn't watch the game. But these are always the parts of, if you're doing a good job as a manager, of recognizing, okay, there's a night where we go head-to-head with a real good hockey team. It's a hell of a match. We're both playing well, and we find a way to win. Then there's other nights where you play, and you realize, you know what, we did play well. Not so sure the opposition got much goaltending and played very well. So these are all the things, and also part of what takes me to the point of, like, I have not, even though, and I respect underlying numbers, and I respect the fact they're a better hockey team, but when I also look at the eye test based on expectations and pressure, I just don't get any feeling or any indication where this is headed. I should say that. I don't get an indication. I guess my point is that they're going to go on a big winning streak, right? Mm-hmm. Like, as we wake up today and as we head into New York tomorrow night, like, I'm back to, I don't know if you've dusted off the panic. Did you use a panic button
yet? We did not. No, it felt like the ship sailed on that. Okay, it kind of came and went, and we missed the window.
Yeah. See, I think that I just, I don't have a great feeling, I guess is my point. I don't care. Like, I've seen teams and players that are on a verge, and you'll say, okay, yeah, you know what? And usually around 500, you know, you're going to, you know, win a bunch of games like the Leafs have done. I don't feel that with the Ottawa group.
It's just inconsistent.
Yeah, and it doesn't feel confident, I guess. And I know what you said about DJ Smith the other day. I don't.
What did I say?
No, just said his presser and everything coming in.
Oh, yeah, I thought he expressed it a little more confidence.
Yeah, exactly. And I have not, because also I'm a little bit out of touch. I'm middle way, Jer. But I don't feel that with this group. Like, I don't feel like there's one player capable of just, you know, Brady Tkachuk's doing his best, but I don't feel like there's this one player, and very few can in the NHL, like Sidney Crosby or McDavid, but just can grab a hold of this and pull the group along at this point.
Well, I think the first step is just more consistency.
Yeah.
Just night in, night out, just consistency. That's what has been, certainly with heightened expectations this year, that's probably the biggest miss is you see at certain times, you go, yeah, this has the makings of a decent team. And then there are other times where it's just, it's terrible. And then there's a lot of other times in which it's up and down, even within the 60 minutes of a game itself.
If I could talk to the guys before the game tomorrow night, I would just talk about a full 60.
Full 60.
200-foot hockey. I want pucks in.
Pucks in deep. We need pucks in deep. Tomorrow will be all cliche radio leading up to Sens and Rangers, but that's tomorrow. All right. Simmer, you get out of here. Go watch the Canada game.
Thank God I'm not working in the NHL.
All right, good day, boys. That'll wrap up the show. We're making way for the Canada soccer pregame show, so stand by for that. And then the kickoff today at 10. Steve Lloyd, Kenny Walls have a shortened version of In the Box coming up at 12:30 after the game. 2 o'clock this afternoon, we'll have Japan and Spain. That's a big one coming up with spots up for grabs in that group. And then after that, it is Lee and Maddie Vowles between 4 and 6 today. All right. And then we got a special Thursday edition of Offside tonight and at 6. And then we got the football game for you. Bills and Patriots tonight at 8. That's the day ahead here on TSN 1200. Enjoy the soccer. See if Canada can pull out a win. Coming up next here on TSN 1200.